All the madness, the horrors, the absolute insanity. How could you have unleashed something so vile and disturbing? It's the Jason Wilkins Factory Podcast.
Well, cheers. We'll start off with the cheers.
Cheers.
Nice. Okay, so this has been a long time coming.
We have to drink after we cheers. Right. It's rude. Mm-hmm. Friends can tell each other that.
True. Thanks for that. Yeah, so this has been a long time coming. So to recap, I had the old podcast, which was the Art Burrito. COVID hit, fucked that up. And so now we're in a new studio space. It's the Jason Wilkins Factory. So now it's the Jason Wilkins Factory Podcast. Right back there. So we have more room to kind of spread out here. It's a little more comfy. We got Nick behind the wheel back there. So Nick's my studio assistant slash, well, we should, I, fuck man, I just got you business cards. I could have put producer on there. So Nick's, yeah, just write it on. So Nick's producing the podcast. He's got everything buttoned down. Yeah, it's going to be the same vibe as the other podcast, having friends in. Of course, you were number one choice to come in.
Thank you so much.
Luckily, you were able to come in. I just can't fucking wait. I'm so excited. We work by ourselves, 90% of the time when Nick's not here or from out, on a job or whatever, we're just going by ourselves.
Yeah.
So bringing people in here and talking and finding out what people are up to, people that are just going, trying to make things happen on a daily basis, really working it, right? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm interested in. And you see these fruit flies. So it's I'm just excited to have people from the community in, friends in, artists in. I'm just super excited. So,
and I think it's fun that we don't see each other for maybe 2 months. We go out for lunch every couple of months or so and get caught up.
Yeah.
But because of our social media, we see each other every couple of days because we're both posting like crazy because we've got kids to feed.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we are aware of what each other's doing the whole time. We shoot each other some little messages like, dude, this is so great. Congratulations. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. Are you in Toronto right now? And everything. And that's fun.
That is fun.
We
always pick stuff up wherever we leave off anyway.
Yeah.
I think there's been times where we've stretched things out for 6 months or even longer at one point.
There's times, in other lifetimes.
Oh, no. Yeah.
We were years
without
speaking with each other.
And, that's how you know it's something. Because when we get together, it's just like, okay, well, what have you been up to? It's
everybody.
I love it. I love it. So we've been friends for...
You're going to say that?
Yeah, we're going to say it. So I post it to, I think 30... it's got to be over 30
it's
now.
It's grade 9, so it's 91.
Okay, so 30, we'll say 31, almost 32 years.
Yeah, September of 91.
Fuck, man. That's insane.
If you're going to put it out there, that's what it is, September 91.
Come on.
We sat beside each other, Mr. Rooney's homeroom class for French.
Yes.
In the arts program at PCVS.
That is nuts. That is nuts. Well, we were just out for lunch before this, and we were talking about what, to be honest, how rare it is to be working full time as artists. It's really rare, and we're really lucky to get to do it 24/7 all the time. I mean, I'm obsessed. You're pretty obsessed. I mean, and I think honestly, that's what it takes to do this period. And I just talked about this with somebody there's no other way to do it.
There's obsession. There's stubbornness. There's
stupidity.
Stupidity.
There's a little bit of blind faith in there.
A lot of things. the willingness to not be wealthy.
Yes, 100%. Well, nobody. That's something else I always say is nobody gets in the arts for the money. Mm. You just don't. There's nobody out there saying, fuck, man, that's it. My parents want me to be an artist. I can't, you know, I don't want to do it. They want me to make the money. I don't want to be an artist. You know, it's always the reverse. It's be a lawyer, always, be an accountant. Yeah. There's money in it, whatever. But when you are, it chooses you, does it not? Like, I mean, ever since I've known you, it's been it.
That's it. Like, yeah, for me, you know, drumming, I'm supposed to drum.
Uh-huh.
And that phrase echoes in my brain all the time. I'm supposed to drum.
Mm-hmm.
Can I do other things? Sure. Am I a reasonably intelligent person? Yes.
I can.
Can I work in a cardboard can I work in a cardboard factory and make three times more the money?
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Have several people whom I've dated in the past have preferred I worked at a cardboard factory and make a lot more money? Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Same.
And
same.
Kept regular hours and was home and at the regular time and everything like that. And yeah, but I'm supposed to drum, and that's tough sometimes.
Yeah.
And you sacrifice some things for that.
Yeah.
For sure.
100%.
And you know, something that I said to my kids just a couple of weeks ago, we were in the car driving and, cause that's what you do in a car. You drive.
Apparently.
Yeah.
So yeah, it does help to keep her on the road.
Sucks. Yeah. So, you know, often when I get paid, I'm a sponsored artist by different companies.
Yeah.
And so I do work for those companies and I'm so grateful, but, they work on corporate time schedules and things like that. So as opposed to when I perform, you usually get paid that night or the next day you get a knee transfer.
Yeah.
When I do, more of my corporate work and touring and stuff like that, it might be weeks or even sometimes a month or two before I get paid. Which is fine because it all works out. Because if it's always a month or two before you get paid, well, you're getting paid from the thing before.
You got a good flow going.
And it always flows. So it works out. But I'm still at a spot right now where because I'm an independent person, I can't get e-transferred by some of these big businesses because I'm not on their payroll because I'm not technically an employee. I'm an artist, a subcontractor.
Yeah.
So I go to my mailbox and look for a check.
Yeah.
So I pick up my kids from school and I go to the mailbox and I open the mailbox. So they're aware daddy gets paid by a magical check that is almost, almost never there.
It may or may not be there.
Yeah, you open it up, you're like, Canadian Tire Flyer. Womp womp.
Fuck you guys.
Maybe next time, right? Oh, it's the bill for the propane tank. Hey, it went up 500% this year. Great.
Yes, yeah.
But so they're aware that that's how, one of the ways daddy gets paid.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they know that I don't make a lot of money, but they also want for very little.
Yeah.
They have their toys, they have their clothes, they have the things that they need, but there aren't super extra stuff.
Yeah.
But they're aware of that. But something that kind of hit me that I explained to them was that, you know, I don't necessarily make a ton of money right now, but I'm okay. My kids are okay. Everything's okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, tomorrow I'm flying to Vancouver.
Yeah.
I'm not paying for that flight. Yeah.
No, literally, tomorrow you're flying to Vancouver.
Tomorrow I am flying to Vancouver. Yes.
Not in general. Tomorrow off.
Tomorrow I fly to Vancouver.
Yeah.
I get to stay in a beautiful hotel resort.
Yeah.
And I get to...
On the dime.
Yeah. And I get to teach and inspire all these other amazing people.
Yeah.
And I get to perform, I get to teach, I get to socialize like this.
Yeah.
Amazing. It's 4 days of that and I fly home.
Yeah.
And I'm getting paid to do that. And I think that has value. Like I have eaten in the nicest pubs across Canada. I like pubs.
Yeah.
And I've flown, you know, most everywhere. I still want to get to Newfoundland and I haven't got to Nunavut yet. Like I have a couple spots that I want to get to.
Yeah.
From a poor kid from Lakefield. And I'm like, oh, let me tell you about my favorite spots in Calgary. I think that has value, right? But that's a hard thing to explain
it
to
is.
Somebody if they don't live it. But I'm flying to Vancouver tomorrow. That's my job.
Yeah.
My only job tomorrow is to fly to Vancouver and get myself checked into a beautiful hotel resort.
Yeah.
That's my job tomorrow.
Yeah. Not bad.
Right? And so that, am I making a lot of money tomorrow? No. Making a very little bit of money tomorrow.
But if you were...
But I'm... Someone else is paying for that plane. Like, that is amazing.
Of course it is.
I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
And that has value.
Yeah.
And that... So, there are different things that have value in life.
Yeah.
And I appreciate those things. I'm very grateful for those things. I don't take them for take advantage of them. And so I'm very, very grateful that these companies invest in me and I'm able to do those things. But as I say, that has value. That is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, 2 years of COVID, 2 years of waiting for that, I didn't realize how much of my life was that travel, how much of my life were my friends that are in all these different places. I have BC friends, mm-hmm. Alberta friends, I have Quebecois, and obviously my Ontario friends too, because we're all just in our houses. So not being able to see those coworkers and friends, that was really strange for me. I didn't realize how much they were a part of my social, family, emotional, all of it. They're a part of my clan, you know, and you don't realize that until.
Yeah. Well, anytime I'm at an event, like a live event or drawing or whatever, I always use you as an example because actually I use you as an example often in a very good way. Cause, like, you know, resiliency is, you know, 100% what it's about for us. So it's being able to bounce back, unscathed, like mostly. Like you're going to feel it, and you did feel it for a couple of years, right? Yep. But you also know that you're in it for the long haul. You have a higher level of perspective. So it's not like you're like, "Oh, I'm in this. I'm fucked. This is it. I'm done." I don't think I ever heard that from you. I don't think I ever would hear that from you because we've been in it for so long. I mean, we know bottom pretty much. Like we know. And like, sure, COVID was bottom, but you also know you're able to pull yourself from that pretty easily. So I use you as an example in that. You know, I always ask, you're looking to strike up conversation when you're drawing somebody because it's awkward. You're staring at them, right?
Right.
So I'm like...
Especially if they have like a wicked crooked nose or something
like
that.
Yeah, like do something about that.
Yeah, you should really shave that.
But it's more like, you know, especially earlier on, how did you come out of COVID? You know, were you affected? Blah, blah, blah. Not really. Worked virtual, which is mostly what I heard.
Right.
Corporate clients, right?
Yeah.
Then I usually get, you know, well, you're in the arts, it must have hit you hard. Yes, sort of. But my friend Michael, is a professional drummer, works for Yamaha, and is used to touring and used to, like, you can't
perform.
Actually, we had this conversation at lunch again. You can see my work anywhere. You can see it online, you can see it, whatever. You can't see music. I mean, you can, I guess, in certain ways, but you know what I mean. Mm. You need to be there and be present. So I'm sure there's people that try to do it virtually, try to do virtual concerts, blah, 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 stuff like that.
We all tried those things.
Really what it comes down to is what you're doing now. You're out there in large venues playing music, right? That's what it's about for you. So, you know, I went through a weird thing early COVID where I was, you know, I wouldn't call it a depression, but I was definitely in a funk for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm used to going, and then you come to a screeching halt, right? You more so than me. So I guess I could really pose that as a question. It's like when that happened, because I got phone calls like early COVID, like, you know, the event you had at the convention center, it's gone. You know, this is gone. I remember looking at Heidi being like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. So what was your... like reaction when that sort of came down the pipe? Like, do you remember?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so careers ebb and flow in different ways. Mm. And so I spent years and years playing a ton of Cuban music and rock and roll and teaching rock drum lessons. And then the drumline stuff started to happen and it morphed more and more into drumline. The Cuban stuff fell away and it was sort of half drumline, half in rock and roll. And then it became pretty much full-time drumline for me. So I started and run the national circuit that all of Canada's marching drumlines are in. So I'm hiring and training the adjudicators and running all of their events, composing for groups all across Canada, teaching four groups a week. And by the time I was doing all of that, I was barely playing my drum set anymore. And I was just like hyper drumline guy. And that gained a lot of notoriety for me and more sponsors and work. And it was very good. Mm. And then COVID comes. They said, okay, we're going to close the schools for 2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Right.
And they just stayed closed.
Like it's, yeah.
Like they just stayed.
Yeah,
like,
immediate.
So it was like, okay, well, you know, I'm just going to, you know, my family loves this game called cornhole. It's huge in the States. You throw a beanbag at a board with a hole in it. And there's a league here in town. It's a lot of fun. So we're in the backyard playing cornhole and having a drink and put some music on going, okay, it's a couple of weeks. And that couple of weeks became a couple of years. Mm-hmm. It just never ended. And so with all the schools closed, there was no drum lines to teach. Mm-hmm. And all the kids are doing virtual school. They don't want to take a virtual drum lesson after school. Mm-hmm. So the virtual lessons thing was not happening. And then there's no concerts. So I started this David Bowie project with my friend Michael Bell. And that band, The Bowie Lives, you start it at the beginning, it's in a bar. And we grew it up to a part where we're selling out 600 seats in a theater.
Yeah.
And then we literally played a 600-seat theater. We sold out 2 weeks before the venue, before the date. And we played on the Saturday, and it closed, like the theater closed on Monday for COVID. Oh, and just closed for 2 years, right? So we spent 4 years building this project from zero to, you know, $40 tickets, 600 people. Okay, this is a thing.
COVID.
And that's just, all right, play cornhole with my dad.
Weird, it's fucking ugly head which is forever.
Amazing, you know? We just stayed home and thought, well, we'll flatten this curve. We've never lived through something like this. And
part of that was nice. I actually enjoyed part of that, whereas like at first it was like, you get to be home with the kids. It was cool for a bit.
There's no stress, no guilt about having work to do because there's nothing to do.
There was nothing to do.
But then you start to feel that foot on your neck of like, okay, you need to have some income, and mm-hmm. there's CERB, but should you have CERB? There might be something else you could do, or you should be doing mm-hmm. something out of the arts and things like that. And
The other story I always tell is how you broke into to get into sponsorship with Yamaha, like how you broke into that convention.
Right.
I'll just let you tell that one. It's my honestly, I'm not even lying. It's my favorite story to tell people because. Because listen, honestly, there was a moment like maybe it probably still would have worked out for you in one way or the other. But you made that fucking happen. Like you made that happen. That wasn't like you weren't even supposed to be there.
No.
And then you're like, I'm going to be here. So right. Tell that story.
Okay. So we used to have a music instrument. Hmm. And like music product convention in Canada. There's still a huge one in the States. It's in California every year, and it's five indoor football fields. Mm-hmm. It's huge. So Canada had a version of that. It used to be really, really big. It was a Metro Convention Center, the one by the airport in Toronto, the huge one.
Yeah.
And so I have to back up a little bit. I did drumline as a kid. Because my dad taught me to drum, and it got to be a point where I needed to learn from more than just my dad, and drum lessons were expensive. So I started doing marching band, doing drumline to learn how to have rudiments and speed and learn these other things. And my first year I won the solos championship for Canada for age 15 or under. And I was like, oh, all I have to do is go home and hit a practice pad. And I get to travel. I get to play music and travel. They feed me three times a day, and there's girls who are dancers. It's boom. Like, it's like better than the Holy Trinity. It's like it's a quad. Like, this is incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's like travel, drums, food, and women. This is the greatest thing ever. So did drumline, but then, so the caveat to that is that when you compete in that, even in the world-class level, once you're 21, you're not allowed to compete anymore. And it just ends. So you think about a person who's a hockey player, a person who's does anything else, and they start as a child and they work and they become the best in the top tier in the world at what they do, but they get to continue. And in the marching band universe, 21, you're dead. It's just cut off. So I always knew that was coming. I saw people who were world famous like world level players who were in their 30s and not happy people doing very different things in their life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to go down that route. Mm-hmm. So I knew that it was a very finite thing for Drumline. So I said, I'm never going to do Drumline. This is just, it's something for kids. I'm not doing it. So go to college, really get even deeper into Cuban percussion.
Where'd you go again?
Cambrian up in Sudbury.
Yeah.
Yeah. And studied with Jack Brompton and had so much fun and really more Cuban, obviously lots of rock and roll while I was there and stuff. And then came back to Toronto, started teaching at Soul Drums in Toronto and teaching lessons in Cuban percussion. Actually got in because of their main Cuban teacher, of a great drummer from Cuba, was his wife was having their first baby and he had wanted to take two weeks off. And I substituted for him.
Sweet.
And then they said, can you stay? Like, sure. So I commuted from Peterborough to Toronto and taught lessons there for 7 years. Mm-hmm. And so I was teaching drum set lessons and Cuban, but then people started wanting snare drumming lessons from me because they wanted to get the speed and all the stuff that comes from the marching world. So I started writing stuff, exercises and things for them that I had used as a kid. And that eventually led to the point where, like, I have so much material here, I should just make a book. So
this is the shit right here.
So we're in an apartment, it's like the main floor of an old brick Victorian home on Elmer Street in Peterborough. I'm using my wife's computer at the time. I'm using a program that's like so poor for writing music, like it was bad. I was getting carpal tunnel from the mouse because I had to click every single note head. Do you know how many note heads there are in drumming?
No, I have no idea.
Like thousands, right?
Yeah.
Like a guitar would go wow, and a drum would go. You have to write every one of those things. You had to click every one with a mouse at the time. It was like archaic.
Wow.
So I wrote a book. And I did it in Microsoft Word, and I had to like copy and paste all of the images of the music I was writing into Microsoft Word and made the book. I had a friend to do the artwork for it because he'd done the artwork for some other books, and self-published and made an accompanying CD for it.
I remember that. I remember being in there and seeing the
it all laid out. And it's a practice pad book. No one had written a practice pad book before, so I thought I could call it a snare drumming book, but we do this on a practice pad, why not say what it is? It's a practice pad book.
Yeah.
So I called it the Mad Practice Pad, and I printed 500 copies because it was the cheapest that I could afford. Because if I printed 50 copies, like the price per unit went down to if I printed 100.
So it just made sense
to print 500.
Yeah.
And I said to my wife at the time that, you know what, I'll sell these 500 books.
Yeah.
And it might take me years, but I'll sell these 500 books. And if I sell X number of them, we're back in the black anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we put it on our Visa and we did it. So I went to that convention in Toronto, and everyone's there. So all the, you know, Fender guitars is there, and Yamaha is there with their drums, and obviously everything Yamaha makes. So all the big companies are all there, and a couple of really big book distribution companies were there and things like that too. So I put 5 books in a briefcase. And you walk into security and like, do you have any products in your suitcase? Nope. In my briefcase, and they didn't look in it. and it went through so I got in, and I should have paid a lot of money
I said, you weren't supposed to be there.
No.
You literally broke in.
No. So I literally broke in. So, so I got in just as like a public person, paid $15 or something to go in and wander around. And I just, the first thing I did is I walked into I just looked at who had the biggest booth of books. And I walked in and said, hey, can I talk to somebody here? I wrote my own book and I'm interested in having you guys distribute it. So they called the boss over and he's like, show me your book. And I walked him all the way through it. And he said, he had a big smile on his face. He goes, how many of these did you make? And I'm like, 500. And that's what he did. He laughed because he's like, the balls, like the confidence that you made 500 of these books. I'm like, I made 500. He goes, okay, well, I'm going to buy all 500 of these books, but we need to go for lunch and we need to figure out how we move forward from here.
And you're shitting your pants.
Okay. So that's how it all got started. That was sort of,
so that went from him by, so that was the Yamaha rep.
No, that was the, that's actually like a, that was a book.
Okay.
Like a book publisher distributor in Canada.
So then from there to Yamaha, what happened there?
Yeah. So just a few weeks after that, I was at St. Michael's. So I was teaching a marching band, and some of their other staff were, staff at a private school in Toronto. And so they brought me on as a substitute teacher there. I did not go to teacher's college. I have no skills for that.
Yeah.
But I was brought on. It's a private school, so they can make their own decisions. And I, because I've been teaching marching band for so long and commanding large groups of children and stuff like that, they obviously felt safe with that. So I started substitute teaching there. And soon afterwards, the music staff were like, okay, how do we start a drum line? So we talked about that, and they said, okay, do you have a preference on the drums? And I said, well, if you want them to be really inexpensive, we buy this brand. If you want them to last a really long time, you need to buy Yamaha. So I played almost every brand as a kid marching, and the Yamahas were indestructible. You know, some people might have a preference of the, oh, this might sound like this microscopicness different, like whatever.
Yeah.
They're always perfectly round, and they last forever.
Yeah.
Yamaha are perfectly round. Their drum sets, because round is what makes the vibration.
Right.
It's got to be round. Yamaha can make a drum out of monkey wood. It will be perfectly round and sound amazing. My drums are made out of oak. My drums are incredible. Like my drum set.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So they sound unbelievable, but they're round. And this is just a Yamaha.
So there's drum sets out there that are not round?
They're not round. Or they're round when they left the factory in Kyrplakistan 2 years ago.
Right.
And by the time they've made it to Canada, they're not round. Right.
So how does that make, sorry, I just don't, how does that make any sense?
The wood can warp, right?
Yeah.
It,
but
it
like,
has to do with how they're physically
but
manufactured.
That's crazy though. If you're a professional musician or any kind of musician trying to make it,
it's a good thing to know.
Yeah.
That you could buy the cheapest little kid's Yamaha drum set.
Yeah.
And still, because the way they physically make the drums,
yeah,
it will be round.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I guess, right, it's the same as, it's similar to art supplies. Like you can get shitty, whatever, but
yeah. So I explained this to them. They're like, well, then let's bring Yamaha in to talk about it. So they contacted Yamaha directly, and Yamaha came to the school and met me, and I gave them a copy of my book, and they researched it, and they brought me on board right away.
So let's follow that. So, charged up your credit card to make the books, walked into a place that you weren't supposed to be at to get, and so someone bought all those books.
And so, yeah, I'm 5 G's in debt.
Right.
In like
2 seconds.
Yeah. And in like 2004.
Yeah.
I'm $5,000 in debt.
So 18 years ago.
That's a lot of debt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
and then
I still had some OSAP debt at that point too, you know?
Sure. Like, sure. And then from there, the college saw, or Saint, it was St. Michael's, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Saw the book.
Well, I was teaching a little tiny marching band.
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of the staff members there brought me on board because I met him from that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what I love. It's like boom, boom, boom. It's this chain reaction, right? Of going after what it is you want.
And it's making relationships.
Yeah.
Making positive relationships with people, not burning bridges.
Yeah.
And believing in yourself and taking some risks, like taking on that debt at that time.
Yeah.
Like we didn't have $5,000.
No,
it was just like,
no. Well, I
put
think
it on the credit card. And,
yeah. So you and I didn't come from much. So like, do you think that helps or hinders? Like I always think back to that. Like, you know, there are certain things I had to do to get into college that were pretty unconventional. Nothing freaky or weird. Ding.
Can you add that star afterwards?
Yeah. Ding. Nick will take care of that. But I, you know, I did that stupid, you know, drug testing thing, and I got $2,500 that paid my first and last. Like, so I did these weird things to
the drug trials.
The drug trials at BioVail. Yeah. I still have that scar on my arm from the needles. But so these are things, you know, you tell people and they're like, you've got to be joking. Like, there's no way. I was telling someone this the other day that I was working with. We kind of had a chat at a job. We're going back and forth at each of our we both had these like crazy stories about stuff. And, you know, her perception was, you know, I've always done this. I've always done well. I'm like, you don't understand. Like, if you want something like you did and like I've always wanted, it's not even really a conscious thought, is it? Like, maybe you'll disagree. I don't know. It's more like one thing leads to the other only because you just don't know how to stop because you love it so much, right? Like, you don't really give it a thought. It just happens. But it doesn't just happen because there's the work. But the work doesn't seem like work. It's just kind of there.
It's right? A different type of work for sure.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's the same for you, but for me, I've definitely partially enjoy the chase.
Yes. Oh.
And the chase makes other people really nervous.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I don't know where my January income is coming
exactly.
from. I don't currently have anything booked in January. I have some stuff in February. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I don't have anything booked in January at this moment.
Yeah.
By the time January comes around, I will have things booked.
Yeah.
And my new practice pad company will have things and stuff like that. And that will be great. But right now, that doesn't exist.
No. Nope.
I don't have a check every 2 weeks that's coming to me. Yeah. I don't have dental coverage. These aren't things that we have. So you have to enjoy that chase.
Yeah.
But to me, the chase is more like that gentle bit of pressure that makes sure that you don't sit on your couch and just watch Netflix.
That's perfectly said.
Like it's mm-hmm. like, cause that check isn't coming. You have to figure something out. Mm-hmm. You have to create a new vein of income.
Yeah.
You have to create something that people want.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the key too.
Yeah.
Cause if I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to do the most authentic polka band.
Yeah.
Well, that's really great at Oktoberfest in Schnitzeltown. Oh, yes. And like, you know, I can get a lot of work in October in KW.
Yeah.
You know, Kitchener-Waterloo, because they have so many, you know, wonderful people of Germanic history back there.
Yeah.
And I can get a lot of work there for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's going to be a cold February if I decide to make a schnitzel band.
See, right? That's something else that sets certain people apart is that, like I always also say, like getting romantic, like some artists get really romantic about their art. Like I can't part with it. It's going to take me 2 years to create this piece. I don't care. You know, that I'll just spend these 2 years in my apartment and I'm going to paint this thing, you know, and that's all they do. But they're not super interested in making a living. Like they're not, or motivated to do that. And that's where I've always definitely been different is like, I do enjoy money. I do enjoy making a living at it. Like, so there, that chase is part of that. It's not just the art. It's not just the creative side. I enjoy what you said, like the chase, like grabbing those things.
Going, you're constantly moving
and you're pushing yourself forward and you're seeing what else you can
get.
What's next?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So to come back to it, is it easier if you grow up poor?
Right.
I'm gonna go with yes.
Yeah.
Especially when you read bios of so many people that have survived and made it, because especially when you're young, there's gonna be really, really skinny times, and so if you're accustomed to that,
mm-hmm.
then
you ease right into that.
That's no problem, right? That's no problem. Like, again, like, you know, my early years and we're at the grocery store and she bought some bagels and I'm like, we can't have bagels, you know? And I was like 22.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever eaten a bagel before, because that's such an expensive, frivolous thing. I've never eaten a bagel.
Right.
I've never, you know, I see them on commercials for Tim Hortons on TV, but I'd never eaten one before.
Yeah.
And she bought some and I was like, okay.
Are you sure?
But we're not buying cream cheese because like,
let's not get crazy.
Like, I'm not nobility here. This isn't happening. Right. And I literally said to the grocery store, we're not buying cream cheese. Like that's not happening. Like I couldn't imagine it.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine being wealthy enough to buy both of those things. And so, you know, and that was in college. So sure. It made it easier in a way, I think, because I was accustomed to living on a lower income. Yeah. So it makes it easier to adjust to that, as opposed to the possibility is, say, being very wealthy as a young person, and then all of a sudden having nothing. I imagine that would be really difficult psychologically. Whereas if it's all you know, you're like, yeah, whatever.
It'd be devastating.
Just keep plugging along and everything will be fine. So I mean, my kids eat bagels. They're fine now. and that's also what I think every human wants, is they want their children to do better than what they did.
Sure.
And so, you know, like, you know, so my kids are okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, and
they get to see dad out there doing this cool shit.
Yeah.
Like, and I always think about that as in terms of legacy too. Like, you know, say there's the money there and you become something that you don't want to become, but you're making good money. Well, that's great. Kids get to see that, you know, there's money coming in and they don't want for anything, but they're not seeing you loving life. Like, they're not seeing you out there like, guess what, guys, I did this today and, you know, I'm fired up about it. And, you know, like, getting excited about life is, it's sad to say, it's massively underrated. Like, it's really sad to say, you know, people just, they go about their day to day, because that's what they were taught to do. And, you know, as long as you have this, this, and this, you'll be accepted and the things are fine. It's so important to, and our kids will see that, like, they get to see us doing these things. Mm. It's wild, man. If you really put it into perspective, it's crazy.
And for me, there's no universe where I expect or want my children to live a life in the arts.
No. Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah,
you,
yeah.
I like how quickly you said no, right?
Yeah.
But we have to.
Mm-hmm.
We have to.
Yeah.
We're supposed to.
Yeah.
That's what you and I do.
Yes.
And it's not supposed to be for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If it was for everybody, the whole world would fall apart.
And that's the other thing.
We need to have all of the things.
Sure. And that's the other thing. It's not about the arts. It's about doing what you really want to do. It has nothing to do with the arts. So I always say that to the kids too. You know, do whatever you want, but make sure you're happy. Make sure either you're happy or ideally you love it. You're in love with what you do on a daily basis. Mm. But at the very least, enjoy it and find something in it that you really like. Mm. That's so important.
And there's obviously billions of people that do a job that they don't enjoy.
Yeah.
But it gives them the financial stability that they enjoy.
Yeah.
And all of the other things that come with it, and the schedule and all those things. It allows them to do the hobbies and the fitness and all the things that they love in life. And that's an amazing route too.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly the world needs scientists, lawyers, doctors, grocers, mail delivery people, like, you know, brewers. We need everything.
100%.
But the world needs everything. So it needs us too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like we're a cog in human society.
Yeah, yeah, you should. You know, exactly.
Everybody gets in their car. They don't drive in silence.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, you know, our old prime minister, like, tried to cut all music funding for everything.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy when you think about that kind of stuff. But everybody has a car, everybody has a phone, and what's on it all the time? Like, you know, where does that come from? Like, pixies and magic dust?
Yes, I know.
Right?
Yes.
Like, no, it comes from us, man.
Yeah, that's
like,
right. Yeah.
Hey, like, you know, like, he was trying to cut the funding from schools and he was posting videos of him playing piano with his son.
Oh, my God.
Oh, really? Like, well, are you kidding me?
Recently, I had a conversation with one of the parents. And
by the way, just to be clear, this is the old prime minister.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not the current one.
Okay, right,
right. He's fantastic.
He's into it. Yeah. I had a conversation with one of our art students' parents and, you know, talking about what's being taught in the schools for art, right? Because not that long ago, I was hearing, you know, we want actual art classes. We don't want arts and crafts. Arts and crafts were what was being taught in the schools.
Yeah.
Arts and crafts.
Totally.
You got your white glue, some pom-poms, and some cartridge paper. Fuck me. Can you, that's art education. So now I think what I'm hearing from people and parents and kids is like, you know, things are shifting where they're learning legitimate things. Like, you know, like actual art fundamentals, like real art. So I don't know where that's coming from or how that's happening, but I think it's partially mandated, but I think it's also partially people speaking up and being like, we need arts. They matter more than people realize, really. Mm-hmm. So we got your, so this is the new thing we got with this podcast is, so we're on video.
Yeah.
And then there. And so what I forgot to mention during COVID was, and this is the, if you're going to pull anything from a shitty experience like that, is the positives that we created. And like, for me, it was learning, because I didn't even know how to use Zoom. Mm-hmm. So it was learning Zoom and like all these other platforms to create art virtually.
Right.
For you, you went and you started making practice pads, right? So I'll let you explain that end of it and kind of what happened there.
Right. So earlier we talked about how I broke into that convention with a book. And that
look at those things. Those are awesome.
First book was practice pads. So I called it the Mad Practice Pad, like crazy mad, because it rhymed and I just thought that was cool.
Yeah.
So fast forward, it's COVID, and I'm in the backyard drinking, listening to music for a few months.
You're like, no!
Contemplating life. And an aunt and uncle who live locally here in the Kawarthas, my uncle, he is a custom kitchen designer and builder. So he has this incredible workshop.
Yep.
And I have worked for him in my youth a little bit. I didn't mess things up too badly, but it wasn't my strength. Right. And I didn't work for him very long, but yeah. I did help him build one kitchen.
Which may or may not be standing at the moment.
I really hope it was. But so he has this incredible shop and we get along really, really well. Mm. They have a great rural property and I hike with them and their dog and we're very close. And so he just has this incredible shop. Yep, there's a great photo of the shop in the background there. So,
yeah.
So I just said to them this idea. So, what had also happened? So, most practice pads are for a snare drum. They're just a small round one.
Yeah.
But the one for a tenor drum for the five drums that we wear is a really big practice pad, and I had broken one that a sponsor had supplied for me, and when I looked into replacing it, I couldn't believe how expensive they were. Like, I was horrified when I found out how much these things cost. And I realized that that's why most of my students don't have a tenor practice pad. They just have a snare practice pad.
Right.
Because snare practice pad's like $70 and a tenor one's $350. I'm like, oh, no. I can make one nicer than this and sell it for profit and still be less than $350.
Yeah.
So I talked to my aunt and uncle about it, said, you know, do you mind if I start mucking around in your shop and trying to make some practice pads? And they said no. And my uncle is in the process of retiring and slowing down. So he helped me, you know, work on all of his machinery and understand how to do that. Mm. And so I started designing practice pads and I made some prototypes and went through the different thicknesses of rubber and different types of rubber to make it feel the right way. And really the biggest thing when I made, so that's the tenor one there, if we could show it.
So that's the one you were saying that no one's ever done.
No one, well, so what I've done with that one is it's pitched. So when you hit the different pieces of rubber, they're different notes.
Okay.
And I did that by the different sizes of rubber. And also underneath, I've bored out chambers of wood. So I've taken wood out in discs underneath.
That is fucking nuts. How do you even know how to do that? Like, how do you, like, but just by sound?
Trial and error. Yeah. Trying it out. But you get an idea and you're like, I bet you if I just carve some wood out of the bottom of this thing, it's going to change the pitch. And I go to my aunt and uncle's farm and I get out the drill press and I, son of a gun, it works.
Look at that guy. He's been playing so hard. He's out.
Yeah. So, so I started making these pads and, they've done well. People have really enjoyed them. That's Skinny George. He's been amazing for me.
Yeah.
But the simplest thing, you got a snare pad here.
Yeah, break that out. Mm-hmm.
So here's one of my snare pads. And so they're natural gum rubber, which is what the pads were like when we were young guys. Mm-hmm. Now everybody uses synthetics that are much cheaper, much easier. They can print and put cool logos on them and stuff like that. But it doesn't bounce the same. It's just not the same way. So so I'm using actual rubber from the tree. It comes from America eventually, but I get it from a Canadian distributor.
Okay.
And so I buy the rubber in sheets and I cut it and I make it round. This was not round when I bought it. It comes in a sheet.
So the precision in these, like, because A, they have to look great, but B, they have to
sound and feel
more
great.
More so sound and feel great. So, like, you said at the beginning you weren't great at this stuff, but like clearly it's awesome.
It's done really well. And the part of, you know, it's in my logo, but what such a little thing that makes it different is just having these little cutouts here, these little wedge cutouts.
Yeah.
Because as a young guy, I was playing practice pads. It just drove me crazy that they didn't fit in a snare stand well.
Yeah.
Because they were always round, or they were an octagon or something weird. They just never fit well.
Right.
It's like, why aren't they just carved out here to fit in a snare stand?
Mm-hmm.
And once you do that, I've got a stand here. And they just bump the table. But it just sits in there.
Did you bring your sticks?
I got a couple sticks.
Okay. You got to do something. Do you know what I always equate this to when I see you doing this? You know Michael Flatley, who does the dancing?
Yeah.
It's like, what was that movie? It's like his feet, his legs are independent from his body.
The Irish jig guy? His legs flail about as if independent from his body.
It's like literally when I see you drum, I'm like, God damn, how is that even possible?
So, yeah, it fits in the stand. It's so simple, but that was just a big thing for me. It's supposed to fit in a snare stand. That's how you use it all the time. Right? And so I made that part of my logo. It's that shape all the time. It has those three little cutouts. And then, so I've had some great success with a couple of influencers on social media. You find somebody, you think they're great, you send them a pad. Maybe they never shoot a video and do nothing for you.
Yeah.
Maybe they never message you again after they've gotten their free pad.
Yeah.
Maybe they shoot like 60 videos with your pads and tag you and everything and thank you, and they're amazing.
Have you had a couple of those where they're like one and done, like they're just like you don't hear from them?
I've had ones where like I sent them a pad and then you don't even ever hear from them. They don't shoot a video, they don't tag you.
What a bunch of dicks.
Those people exist.
Yeah.
And then you have George.
Well, this is the guy I see all the time.
George has been amazing.
Yeah.
So he's a super, super talented guy. He lives in a suburb of Miami, and he's funny. He's kind. I believe he's also a youth pastor.
Cool.
As a career. He marched world class when he was a young man. He's very talented, and he's just great. And especially when he started shooting with my big tenor pads, his videos really blew up, and it's been great for him. It's been great for me. That's how it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be symbiotic, and George has been amazing. And so, frankly, since this, other companies have been sending him some pads now too.
No way.
Yeah. So like those videos right there that you can see, that's not my pad. But that is another Canadian company, which is cool because there's a guy in Florida, and that's a company from Abbotsford, BC. So that is cool. And so that is Drumeo. And Drumeo are one of the most famous YouTube instruction video places that you can find.
So he's doing, you're up there with them.
So that is cool. George is just a really kind person.
Yeah.
He's very funny and clever. So his videos do really well. And he has been very gracious. He tags me in all his things. And so, you know, it's been great for his videos, and it's been great for my sales because been people like, where'd you get this practice pad? And he's very kind to say it's at Mad Practice Pads, and so yeah, so that the
photo
beside him there, those are ones that I'm shipping. So 2 weeks ago, I was shipping to England, Austria, North Carolina, and Quebec.
What? Do you remember? Well, when you first started, you're like, I don't know, I sold one or two, but we had this conversation where it was like, dude, you know, now you're creating this thing that, you know, you can carry forward like after the pandemic shit is done.
And, you know, part of it's just like throwing past at the wall, seeing what sticks. And
oh my God, that's everything.
That's right. And so the practice pad thing has been nice. And again, you have months where like a college, like a college says, I want a full set in a custom color for our college.
Wow.
Okay, amazing. And that's
is that the guy? See if you can find that, Nick. There's one where the guy's like, he's got his trunk open, and there's 10 or I don't know how many pieces of the, it might not be on this, it might be somewhere else.
Yeah, he bought 14 pads.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for Western University. So that'd be on the Mad Pads Instagram.
Yeah.
For Western University and
there it is.
There it is. Yeah. Got them in the custom in their purple.
The middle, yeah. That's it. Yeah.
So that is that's in the purple, that is the purple for that university. So again, because everything is, you know, handmade by me, it's like, okay, well, if you want a specific color, just tell me.
Yeah.
And you'll need to pay a little bit more because I have to now go to the specialty paint shop where I buy my paints. And
yeah.
Because I need a particular paint that I can spray.
Yeah.
Because I'm not rolling these on. These are all in a spray booth.
Really?
I'm wearing the big ridiculous mask. I think there's a funny picture of me sweating in August. I got a
huge mask.
Look
how happy that guy is.
Goggles. He's awesome. That's a very positive guy. His name's Quinn. And he is the nicest, most positive dude.
Those are the people you want, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he's like, I need these for Western University, please. I need them in our purple. Let's make this happen. And so
there's a good one of you. Oh, yeah. There you go. There you go.
So that's what painting.
That's
is
some
like.
Breaking Bad shit right
that
there.
Is totally. So
is it meth or drum pads? We don't know.
There's an air compression tank that feeds the gun. And when that tank is being filled up, it's super loud. So you have to wear huge ear protection from when that thing is running,
right?
And then you need the mask because you're spraying and everything like that, and I'm usually wearing glasses and everything too.
That's so cool.
So in the summertime, that is a really hot, messy thing to do.
That's awesome.
Plus everything takes a long time to dry, but so I sprayed them in that custom color for him, and that's a fun thing to do. And then because of that, a couple of universities have been like, hey, could we please have a quote now for a set for us?
This is how it happens.
And you're just hoping that, you know, so sent out those quotes.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully those will come through.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe that's how January gets better.
No kidding.
I don't know yet.
But this is how it happens. You got stuff like this where one thing leads to the other, to the other. And then before you know it.
And so I just sent a couple of pads to a really famous percussionist in England. And I'm really hoping that becomes something. Maybe it'll be nothing.
Yeah.
But maybe it'll blow us right up. And you don't know. And you have to just take those.
That's the best part. It's the best part. Because one of them eventually clicks. And you get that email or that message. That's the picture. Look at that. Motherfucker.
That's a happy guy. Yeah.
Okay, sure. So I have to pee. So can you, we'll get your sticks out. You can do a little, can you do a little something?
Can I drum while you're going for a pee?
Yeah.
Okay, what
or at
do,
least get it ready.
Well, it's because of the beer. What do you do while I go to the washroom?
I'll just juggle. Nick says he'll edit it, so we'll see.
Okay, we'll take a quick break.
How's okay, that? Okay, cool.
Okay, we're back from our break.
We're back. Ah.
So much better.
Cheers again.
Cheers again.
We only got through one beer. I mean, we had one already, but.
What?
Yeah.
Don't be giving away all our secrets. Come on. Don't be giving it all away. No, so something that we were discussing earlier was the idea of the chase.
Yeah.
And that we're trying to find ways to generate revenue from our art.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And you had said about how, like, people could be stubborn and say, oh, I'm going to stay home. It's going to take me 2 years to make this piece of art, but I'm going to do it.
Right.
And how realistic that is.
Right.
In reality. And so,
I mean, again, to clarify, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I guess, I mean, if that piece of art's going to make you a good chunk of money, maybe that's fine.
And you've got a partner making $200K who can float you for that.
Right.
Time.
So I don't want to pigeonhole it into one thing.
But just the idea that there is some balance. If I want to just stay home and write the most ridiculous, difficult prog rock hybrid metal crap at home,
yeah,
I can do that
/ polka.
I can't expect people to pay money to see it or to buy it though.
Right
So how do you do something that's viable for other people?
Yeah,
right. So like I'm starting a new band right now, and I'm the musical director of the ensemble, so I've brought musicians together, I've chosen all the songs. We had a quick little rehearsal with four songs just to make sure that this was a viable option.
Yeah.
And now those musicians have gone home with 24 songs to learn that I've picked out, and we will come back and make sure that's okay. I'll add a few more, and we're hoping that New Year's Eve will be our first show.
Sweet.
And,
nice.
And I've designed this to be, like, I don't want to give it all away yet because it doesn't exist technically yet.
Yeah.
But the idea is that, to me, is like people in their 40s now have kids old enough that they're able to go back out again.
Yes.
And they now have disposable income.
Yeah.
So we need to start designing shows that are musically appropriate for that demographic. Mm-hmm. There's so much available out there for people in their 60s,
mm-hmm.
people in their 50s, but we need stuff for people in their 40s now because things evolve, right?
Yeah.
So
and you relate. You were that age.
That's
so it makes sense.
It's fun for us. Yeah. We've been playing our parents' music, and then we've been playing, you know, music that we had when we were kids.
Yeah.
Now we're starting to play music that we had, you know, as young adults, mm-hmm. and that's exciting for us too,
mm-hmm.
for sure. And so it's music that I know really well, so it's very easy for me, which is great. But the idea that you're always trying to think of new ways of creating new things that you're hoping other people will love.
Yeah.
Because part of it is the excitement of other people loving what you're doing too.
That's exactly it. I had someone the other day say to me, you know, when do you do your own stuff? Like, and it sounded weird coming out of my mouth, but I'm like, I really don't have a desire to do my own work, which is so, it's like, it's almost a little bit ironic. It's like you get into the arts because you love it and it satisfies you creatively because you're selfish and you want to do art because you love art. But I love doing art for other people.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's the performance side of it.
Right.
Right. And it's like, I get up on stage and you start playing that song, everyone's eyes light up.
Yeah.
And you smile and you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go.
That's right.
And you see their happiness and it feeds that energy back to you.
Yeah.
Right? And then you send it to them and it just goes back and forth and that it's so exciting. It's so big. Let's go.
That's so cool.
So I'm teaching a class in Cuban percussion at this convention coming up, one of the things I do. So it's like Cuban percussion for outsiders. And so so I've been practicing a lot of Cuban percussion right now, and I've been reading a lot to help refresh my memory, stuff like that. One of my heroes is Tito Puente. And so this is a guy of Puerto Rican descent, born in New York City, and he becomes like one of the world's greatest Latin entertainers and stuff like that, right? But so there was a time where Cuba was America's playground. It was the cheapest place to go, and it had amazing music. So everybody vacationed to Cuba. Missile crisis, Cuba bad, right? So that there's a big flip in the 60s,
right?
All of a sudden, Cuba very bad.
Right.
And so you got a guy like Tito Puente, who has created this incredible career, and it's becoming world-renowned. He's touring the world as doing Cuban music. A Puerto Rican guy from New York, not a Cuban. But anyway, so there's hope for us all. But so Cuban music, right? And then all of a sudden Cuba's very bad.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, oh, this isn't Cuban music. This is Latin jazz.
Oh, okay, right.
He rebrands it and just keeps going.
Yes.
And then even takes some like famous jazz songs from the 40s and the 50s,
mm-hmm.
and he just redoes them in the 60s with his Latin band.
So wow.
He does them as a mambo or as a cha-cha-cha, but they are famous hits in the past.
Right.
Go! And it makes those hits even more famous, makes him even more famous. Go-Go was one of the best things for his career.
Yes.
You know, he was already super famous in the Latin world.
Yeah.
It brought him out to the whole world.
So if he had been like, fuck you guys, I'm still going to do this, that would have been done.
Yeah.
He would have been done.
He wrote Oye Como Va. It was a big hit for him.
Yeah.
Then Santana does it in like 1971.
Yeah.
And it explodes. Well, he first hears it on the radio. He's so upset. This guy's taking my song. He's ripping me off.
Yeah.
Well, Santana gave him full writing credits for it.
So who is it again? What's his name?
Tito Puente.
Oh, you got him up there.
Yeah. Tito Puente. El Rey, the king, the Mambo king. King of timbales.
Right.
This guy's amazing. So he's so upset that Santana's done his song until he gets the first check.
Yeah.
In the mail, and he says it. He goes, I got the first check in the mail. I'm like, Santana's spreading Latin music to the whole world. This is amazing. Santana's first three big hits were not his own.
Right.
Because he was growing popularity in the clubs in California, in San Francisco, but his songs were all 30 minutes long. They're all huge jams. And so his manager's like, yeah, cool. We can't put a 30-minute song on the radio.
Right.
So record label's like, here, why don't you learn these three songs? Songs that were from other artists that were already on their label.
Okay.
So Oye Como Va, Black Magic Woman, and Evil Ways.
Yeah.
They're all cha-cha-cha. They're all the same basic thing.
Right.
And they're all someone else's song.
Right.
He did. And those are the songs that he grew up on.
Yeah.
And has had an incredible career. I love him. I played a Santana tribute for years. Like, I love Santana. That's Latin rock. That's a hybrid. It's another
okay.
vein, right?
Okay.
But he got that from Tito Puente. And it's just, to me, like, again, a survivor. That man has, you know, he altered and changed things. You know, before him, the timbales, which are the two steel drums with only a top
there
drum.
There he goes.
Head and
look at him there. Yeah.
Before him, the timbales, there, that's perfect if we can see that shot. So he's got two timbales, two cowbells. Before Tito, the timbales were sat in the back. And the band leader, when they would want to switch to the montuno, to what we would call like the chorus of the song, to
yeah.
the, right? He would point at the timbale player, and then the timbale player would go raga gow gow gow, or doo 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 on the cowbells, and the whole band would go, oh, this is when we, because everyone's chanting and having a nice time, and all of a sudden the cowbells go doo 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 doo, and all the brass pick up their horns. And now they start blasting the chorus, and they switch, right?
Yeah.
So the band leader always had to look over at him. If you watch live videos of Santana, he's jamming, having a good time, and then he turns his head and he nods at the timbale player. The timbale player plays a big fill, boom, and the whole band switches, right? So Tito's like, why am I telling him to do that?
Right.
So it's like, move these timbales up to the front, put them on a stand so I can stand up and play them, and I'm going to play timbales, and I'll do solos, and I'll lead the band. And he did that from the, he graduated Juilliard for music. He wrote for the whole orchestra. Like, he's the real deal.
Yeah.
But he changed everything, that guy, and he was so brilliant at adapting to be successful through the eras. As political climates, as musical climates changed, he could continually adapt.
He changed with
it. He was in episodes of The Simpsons, right? Like, he's like,
yeah,
you know, like,
that's amazing.
You know, like, this is just such an awesome guy, and such an entertainer, but so he worked so hard,
yeah,
you know, perfectly bilingual in Spanish and in English, and just,
see, you know what, I think evolution is a huge part of what we do. Like, I always say I get bored so easily, so I'm always trying new things. And like, that's part of the process. That's part of reaching certain levels, because A, times change. So if you're doing work that was popular 5 years ago, you're out of business.
Right.
And that I feel happens organically for me anyway, probably for you too, where you're like, you're just in tune. Like, we're just in tune to kind of what's up, like what's going on. And then, so what's your, like, we only have like 5-ish minutes left, but so I we'll end with you playing, if that's good. Do you want to or no?
I mean, there's
no,
I don't know. There's lots of YouTube of drumming. But
okay. We don't have to.
My sticks go really fast and my head stays still.
That's okay. That's whatever you want to do. But like, oh shit, I totally forgot what I was saying. Anyway.
Well, just talking about, it's always evolving, and you know, like for me, COVID was a hard stop.
Yeah,
it was definitely time for me to take stock in. Okay, what? Let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
What do I have to offer?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a white guy from Lakefield, Canada. What do I have to offer the world in an artistic way? And my life had grown to be like 90% drumline pre-COVID, just about. And so drumline was taken away during COVID. Now drumlines are back, but everyone's starting off from scratch.
Yeah.
They don't need a master to come in and help tweak their lines, because the music educators can get their groups going. So there still isn't a lot of drumline work for me. But it's like, actually, drum set is what I've done since I'm 2 years old. I should be doing more of that.
Yes.
And I fell in love with Cuban music as a teenager, way before college. And I love Cuban music. It's so much fun. I should probably be doing more of that. And so for me, the adaptation from COVID is I've started this practice pad company.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I like working with my hands. It's still on brand for me, because my first book was practice pads.
Yeah.
So it's on brand for me doing that. But it's like, yeah, I should be playing my drum set more. I should be playing congas more. I should be singing more for people and being, you know, the drumline vein is amazing. I'm still doing drumline. I'm doing drumline workshops on this tour I'm about to do. But I became like Mr. Drumline, and that's great.
Yeah.
But there's other things I do really well too, yes, that I love and I think that I have to offer for people. So
yeah,
it's sort of kind of resettling my career. I'm starting again. It's sort of a, it's really just a rebirth because we're starting from scratch again.
Mm-hmm.
And so now there is congas and timbales and bongos. There is my rock and roll drum set. And then there is making practice beds.
Yeah.
And there's doing drumline tours and yeah, everything. And it's, you know, adapting with the times, as you say.
That's wicked. And I love, oh my God, I love, but I love seeing you get fired up when you're talking about that guy. I just love seeing you get fired. You know, like, it's like, I don't know. It's like, it's pure passion is what it is. Like, you're just super passionate about it. Like, and you can tell it just exudes from you. Like, it's just there.
I played like 2.5 hours of timbales before I met you for lunch today.
Right?
You know?
Like, so does it get any better? Yeah. Honestly, it's crazy.
So much fun.
Awesome.
So much fun. And truly, I know it's cheesy, but your Instagram, your Facebook, everything, is seeing you and seeing how you chase. It helps me to remember that I have to keep chasing, have to keep pushing too.
Oh, thanks.
And that you're making an income, you're feeding children,
yeah,
and you're successful in human and life,
yeah,
by doing your art. And I have to do the same thing too.
Like, yeah, I'm a psycho. I can't get enough. I just love it. You have to be in love with it, or it doesn't work at all. I would have given up ages ago. You know.
And also part of the fun is the constant improvement.
Oh yeah.
So much better than last week.
Oh yeah, but also painful, because I'll look back at old stuff 3 years ago. I said it to Nick. It's like you look at, probably you too, you're like watching yourself. It was probably almost worse for you because you watch yourself play. You're like, fuck. Whereas, like, you know, I still look at my old stuff and I'm like, oh no. And people really enjoyed that? No.
And
like,
that, it's so for much. Everybody, and that's really misunderstood when they speak to an artist like Sting, like David Bowie or whoever, and they're like talking about a track from 30 years ago and they're like, oh man,
you don't know. Yeah,
because to them, like, they're so much better now.
Yeah,
because their mind has evolved more and they've absorbed more art, created more art.
Yeah, but I don't know about you all, but also I associate the time I was in with some art. So say it's during a rough patch, but I created something during that time, then I'll associate that piece of art with that negative experience.
Right.
So then I'm like, oh man, I wish I just, it's like music. You associate so much with music. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Blind Melon, when we were on, it's still in the back, it's still there.
I can't hear Black Hole Sun without thinking of your cottage.
So when we would drive to my cottage in my mom's K car, in her, yeah, the gray shipmobile, and we cranked Black Hole Sun.
Yeah.
On the way there. And that's stuck in my, that's burned in my memory.
Black Hole Sun, Jason Wilkins. You just hear them.
Yes.
I think of you every single time.
So it's the same as art. I associate some of the art I've done with these times, good and bad. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Where are we at, Nick? We got to go.
One quick thing.
Yep.
A little bit different for me, because you talk about the memory, but also the feeling.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, when most people are feeling a certain way, they want to hear music that allows them to explore that feeling.
Yes.
That is normal. I am the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to have most feelings. I want to have the feeling of happiness.
Yes.
So I don't do sad music. There's no sad music on my
same
phone.
No,
I have,
same.
I have no sad music. I'm like, I don't do sad music.
Nope.
It's how I want to feel.
That's
and
a great
I play
point.
This music because I want to feel this way.
Yeah,
right.
I do the same thing. I'll come in here, and if I'm feeling shitty, I'll definitely put on something even to the extreme, like positive pop, like even stuff I wouldn't normally listen to.
Right.
Even if it's so bad, I'm like,
you want it's to get the that
it's
emotional
the
feeling.
It's the extra, right? Even though it's so bad, it's true. Yeah, Heidi loves dark shit, like dark music. Like, I'm like, how does this? Have you ever seen? We'll go 5 more minutes. Have you ever seen This Is 40?
Yes.
With Paul Rudd.
Yes.
There's the bedroom scene where he's in there in the kid's bedroom with the mom and the two daughters and him, and he's like, "You don't know real music." So they put on Lady Gaga or something like that, and they're like,
He's like, no. He pulls out, at the time, the iPod, right? He puts it in the player. He's like, this is real music. And it's like something really, he's like, doing this. This is, listen to the lyrics. It's dark. It's good though. It's dark. And like, I just can't, like, yeah. I get that. You can't, to pull yourself out of something, you need that.
Yeah.
That extra, right?
Can't do it. But I'm not I still have some of my favorite songs of all time. I have no idea what the lyrics are.
Oh, shit. Nick, you should pull it up. That's the best part. It's, that's probably one of the best parts of the movie. So this is 40, and it's like the, I don't know, Paul Rudd scene.
But yeah, it's, but yeah, people like music and art for different reasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I like to feel happy or excited.
There energized. It is, the top one.
And so one used to do that, but there are people that want to be sad.
Yes.
And don't get it. When we were in the arts program together in high school,
yeah,
there was one hallway and there was like three girls that would sit there,
yeah,
and they would listen to sad music and they would just cry.
Oh yeah.
They just spend their lunch hour,
yeah,
crying.
But that's also teenage angst.
Listening to Blue Rodeo and yeah. Moxie Fruvis.
Oh my God, right? Yes.
And I'm just like, well, you could choose to sit there and cry and listen to that.
Yes.
Or,
yeah,
like, you know, teenage angst, that's what Rage Against the Machine is for. And
yeah.
Like, rah, that yeah. energy. And
but there was
still,
also yeah. Bare Naked Ladies then. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, let's
you
go.
You could laugh.
Let's
you
go.
You didn't
yeah.
even cry.
Here it is. And he's like, you can see him there. He's like, this is ridiculous. Anyway, it's glitchy, but...
I think
here he goes. Here he goes.
I think Judd Apatow's wife is pretty.
Oh my God, yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
There, listen. It's bumming me out.
Exactly. As soon as it starts to be sad, I'm like...
He's the best, though. Anyway, you kind of get it. But he starts kind of doing the head bob. Where he's like,
yeah, just really enjoying.
He's
the
like,
sadness.
Listen, no, it's about the lyrics. It's about the lyrics. Anyway, we gotta go. I gotta get my kid, or the school's gonna call me.
Thank you so much for including me in this. So much fun, dude.
Listen, man, if I can reach, okay. It was awesome having you back. And so this is number one, and then we're shooting another one tomorrow with Kevin from the Art Collective.
When this yeah. becomes popular,
yes,
like. 75 episodes in.
Yes.
And this like catches and becomes a big thing.
Yeah.
We need to say, hey folks, go back to number one.
Yes.
Go see Beauclair.
And then we'll monetize it and we'll give you 10%.
Let's not worry about that. It's just like when this becomes really, really popular. You got yeah. some girls sitting here that I don't even know.
Yeah.
Could we be like, yeah, remember we had Beauclair?
We'll have Nick pull up number one, be like, this is how it's done.
That's how it got started.
Thanks, man. Appreciate cool. it.
Thank you so
Bye,
much.
Bye everybody.
Bye.
We here at the JWF Podcast wish you and yours the very best of days ahead.